Welcome to the Balance Wellness Solutions Podcast with pharmacist Dr. Courtney Sanfelice, where we will discuss all things related to health and wellness, getting to the root cause of health issues, and learning how to create a balance to obtain all of your wellness goals. Hot topics including CBD, gut health, nutrition, immune boosters, Ayurvedic health, women's health, essential supplements, and so many more. Here's your host, Courtney Sanfelice.
Dr. Courtney Sanfelice here today with Cheryl Ditzel. She is a family nurse practitioner who is working in the functional medicine space. She specializes in mood, fatigue, and gut relationship. Prior to becoming an entrepreneur, she spent 24 years in nursing, with the last 7 years serving children and families in the outpatient setting as a board-certified family nurse practitioner. After experiencing 14 years in the acute care hospital population and serving as a nurse manager for a neurovascular ICU, she discovered that her own wellness was suffering and the journey into functional medicine was born. Guiding clients to unlock their own personal wellness in order to live a fully engaged and productive life of love and joy has become her mission. So welcome, Cheryl. I'm so happy to have you on today.
Thank you so much, Courtney. I'm very happy to be here as well.
So we are talking about a very important and serious topic today. We're going to be talking about mental health and, more importantly, post-COVID, as I know in my practice in the pharmacy setting and the functional medicine space, how many people are having so many issues after COVID with all of the new lifestyle that they're living and all of these new guidelines of life and how people are suffering from them. I know that I see it in the pharmacy all the time, and I can't even imagine what you see as a practitioner when people are coming to you, you know, for help as, you know, for their appointment. So what are you noticing? What are the things that you're seeing from people as they're coming in just for the regular appointments and they're kind of unleashing? What's going on?
So it was very interesting to see this play out over pandemic, specifically starting with our lockdown period. I practice family medicine in two different offices. One is a pediatric office. We do some family medicine there, but we mostly cater to children, so infants through 26 years of age. My other office, I do pure 12 years to 103 is my oldest patient. So family medicine with no young pediatric patients. And so you're seeing both sides of the spectrum of age. And like most things in medicine, pediatric population and the geriatric population always suffer the most. And that's certainly what we saw with mental health services, access to mental health services, psychiatric care. And pre-COVID, ironically, you know, the services weren't fantastic to start. So the access to care was very difficult for some people, depending on, you know, where they lived, their socioeconomic status, their lack of social supports or family, their inability physically to, you know, leave their own environment like their home. So it's been very interesting to see the struggles of everyone. So on lockdown, you know, we were doing telemedicine and telephone calls for quite some time with our geriatric patients, and their social support was church, community events, book club, bowling league, pickleball, tennis, you know, all these activities were gone.
It's so sad. And a lot of times they, like, you know, it's depending on their situation too. I mean, I know, you know, they make a project out of coming to the pharmacy or going to the doctor. It's part of their, you know, they don't want to do things on telemed. They want to go, that's their outing, to go get out and see people. And you know,
when the, you are absolutely right.
You know, when the doors of the pharmacy were locked and we used to have Wellness Wednesdays, what we still do for, and it's like whatever the cheap vitamin percentage off, and they come and they're knocking on the door and we're like, the doors are locked. And like, it was their outing on Wednesday to like get out. So, you know, that's special to them to go and have that one-on-one contact and coming to see, hey, I'm going to see Cheryl today, and having that one-on-one contact. And now, you know, you're doing it through the computer, and not the same, right?
Well, absolutely. And they would come dressed up. They just went and got their hair done. You know, so my elderly patients would say, well, if you have to lay me down, make sure you don't mess up my hair. You know, so, I said, of course I'm not going to mess up your hair. You just weren't spend two hours at the salon, you know? And I know this because they're conversational with me. It's not just about the medical question. Me understanding how many times a week they ate a frozen dinner is related to their health, but also their socialization, which as humans, that's what we're meant to do.
Yep.
We are social people. So our visit together was the only thing on their calendar. And so we're at other doctor's appointments or their hairdresser or the groomer for their dog. So all of that was cut out, or even just being able to stop by my office to drop something off. A lot of my patients make cookies, breads, jams, you know, they're appreciative because we listen.
Yes.
And, you know, my partner there, I mean, he practices, you know, what we, him and I both call country medicine, in the sense that, you know, we ask you all the, you know, appropriate gold standard evidence-based practice questions, but when that's over with, we try to get through that quick because that's really not what's important to these patients.
I love that. I love that. It's so important. And that's what we need more of. Hence you getting involved, you know, you kind of incorporating your daily practice and adding more of the functional medicine practice into your daily regime, because it's hard with insurance. As I know, I hear it all the time from practitioners, you know, you're mandated with your insurance, what you've got to get done in that X amount of time that you have. So being able to do what you do and still be that ray of sunshine and still be that, you know, I'm listening to you. I hear you. I know not to mess your hair up, your hairdresser appointment when, you know, was
today.
And knowing people on that level is what people need, is what everybody needs. And not even just off topic of mental health, just in general, just healthcare overall, taking that time to listen to people to get to that root cause and understand what's going on.
Well, healthcare, you know, I mean, if you look at it, that is what we're supposed to be doing. I mean, I see my patients in my community. So during lockdown, there was no social community. You know, you didn't do that. I mean, it was eerie to get in your car and drive to the office because, you know, we were required to go. So, I mean, there's been no break for us. And
I was still at the pharmacy for my 40-hour weeks that I'm now half there. But yeah, it was all very eerie. Like, you were like the only car on the road. It was very weird for a good couple of weeks, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, if you just discuss mood as it relates to anxiety and depression during, you know, a pandemic, post-pandemic, you know, whatever you want to call this now, as we're like trying to normalize our lives,
yes,
you know, that's one thing. But then you also have the layers of those people that already had baseline psychiatric mood disorders, or what I like to call neurogenic disease. So how do you take care of those people when now the people that have that baseline are now really flaring?
Yeah.
So what access to care do they have, which was incredibly minimal? And they're also facing this idea they might die of a virus.
It becomes, you know, especially if they have anxiety issues,
yes,
and whatever disorder that they have going on, or whatever their worries were before, is now to the umpteenth degree, because now, exactly, now it's almost becomes like a paranoia thing where they're, you know, depending on what condition that they had, that intensified it and has increased their anxiety. And
absolutely,
I know, and you know, with most of my clients that come to me for functional medicine, and even in the pharmacy, people come in and they, whatever they're coming in for, and usually it's more in the functional medicine space when they're coming to me with an issue, a gut issue, and you know, everything, anxiety is secondary to all of it. Every single person that I have, I feel like, okay, well, we're adding a CBD regimen onto that, or we're going to talk about some adaptogens and some things to help with your adrenal function, because everybody's adrenals are maxed out because everybody is so stressed. And it's like, it just seems like no matter what they're in for, stress, anxiety, it's all secondary to it. Everybody's got it going on. And it's like, how do we help them as healthcare practitioners? You know, what services are available? You know, what, you know, in the pharmacy, we're limited with what we can do. I can do more in the functional medicine space, but in your practice, how do you feel like, what about kids? Like, how are they adapting to all of this when you're in your peds office? Like, what are they experiencing?
So it's interesting with children because, you know, they're modeling the behavior of their parents or guardian. So when the parent or guardian is stressed, now they experienced work stressors, like we already talked about. If they were an essential employee, they were required to work, you know, to go to work. If they didn't go to work, they maybe could get paid through the state, but if they're essential, they were required to go. So here they're going to work. They have a lot of financial stressors. They're worried about their job. They're worried about their children. They're possibly worried about their relationship, you know, because we're thinking, how is childcare? Who's watching kids? There was a gigantic surge of people not working, you know, and it was women and men alike. I mean, it wasn't just the woman staying home. It was whoever wasn't the non-essential or whoever made more money went to work. So these children see this. They hear it. So even when the parents are saying everything's fine, it's not fine. And they know it. They see the body language. They see the stressors. They hear them talk about money, or they hear them talk about, well, we can't afford that right now, or whatever that might be. And their social network was cut off. They're no longer in school. So now they're home. And then the expectation is that they're being homeschooled by someone that can navigate that. And that's not so easy for, you know, for those of us that have some affinity for technology or being on Zoom or, you know, Google Meet or some of these things. It takes some practicing to be able to function in that space. But not to mention, do you even have the access for that? And believe it or not, you know, there are people out there that do not have that.
I know.
They go to school so they can have access to technology.
True.
They also go to school so they can eat breakfast and lunch and potentially, you know, a snack large enough that almost serves as dinner and aftercare. So there was a lot of scrambling for school districts to attempt to be able to still provide these children that normally, if they're home, they're not getting breakfast. Their families can't afford it. So how are they going to get breakfast?
Right. It's so sad. And it is. There's different levels of struggles for every level. Everybody had their own struggles along the way. But yes, what about those kids that, like you just said, that are in that boat, that was everything to them? Going to school was the basis of everything. They're whether they're eating a meal a day, they're two meals a day, three, whatever, versus not having that. People that can't afford computers, you know, you think it's a luxury that we have, that it's just a norm that we have it, but for some people they don't, you know, and
right. And if you take it across the whole socioeconomic scale, you know, everybody encountered this, and there was disparities in rates with it, you know, as you look at the financials, mostly because the disparity pre-existed. So there was a baseline that was a difficult situation, and this just added another layer. And if you talk about psychiatric, mental health, you know, neurogenic disease, however you want to describe it, you know, there's a continuum. So in family medicine, we don't see the true chemically altered psychiatric severe disease. That generally doesn't come on our doorstep. Those people were identified early in their life. They've had a psychotic episode, something that allowed them to access care younger. And they're in the channel or the chute for that, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. They're on medications that they're not going off of because they're, you know, there's no, I mean, even when it comes to healthy lifestyles, it's even when they're on medication, sometimes it doesn't really.
Not enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Where, you know, they might, depending on their level of whatever they have going on, that takes precedence over everything, really.
Correct. And then you have this other spectrum of psychiatric or mood, where you're looking at people that are depressed or anxious because of situation. So had this situation not occurred, they may not have experienced these feelings at all. You know, their coping mechanisms were taken from them, and they didn't realize how much they relied on those things. So team sports, absolutely. Wow. What a zinger. The arts and theater, drama, music. I mean, all of those things were outlets. Those were also taken away in a structured way. If there was nothing to substitute at home, then those kids were, you know, able to verbalize that, you know, they're really lonely. You know, they feel isolated in many different ways. They're gaining weight. They're choosing poor food for a number of reasons. And we all know that, you know, our serotonin, it's 95% of our serotonin's in the gut. So that heavily affects your ability to function in terms of mood and choice and personality. So here we are, you know, in a bad situation, getting worse, you know, and, you know, now we're expecting the parents to be therapists as well. And we know how well that works out. Just not a great idea.
No,
you know, not a great idea because it's tough for us. I mean, I have four kids, you know, I would never want to be that to them. I feel it's important that they are able to talk to other, you know, a professional that can meet them where they are in their emotion and that they trust that person to give them advice that is not, you know, linked to your maternal instinct.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a completely different ballgame coming from just somebody who's there to listen with a mom with feelings and emotions putting into it. It's hard. It's imperative that they have other people to speak to, whether it's teachers or counselors or therapists or whoever it is that, you know, that that's their outlet. And, you know,
Being, you know, pediatric services, I mean, we were the outlet. I mean, our, you know, when we schedule a patient that's going to talk about mood or fatigue, you know, or change of behavior at school or in the home, behavioral issues, you know, we schedule that as a conference. So we realized when we looked at our schedule, we were conferencing all the time. I mean, it was like, we were hoping for a well visit, you know, because you're doing conference after conference after conference, absolutely necessary. We're happy to do it. But, you know, that's difficult for them because they're meeting us in a space that they generally don't meet us in. You know, I mean, yes, they talk about their emotion and their behavior, but this to them felt very catastrophic, you know, and some kids, it was. Absolutely. The incidence of eating disorder in children in our office, it went up 350%.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. makes complete sense, but wow, like, yeah, wow, yeah. To hear it actually come out of somebody's mouth that's seeing it firsthand is like, wow.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, waiting list for eating disorder clinic was between 3 and 6 months.
Yeah. You don't have 3 and 6 months when you have a kid with it, with an eating disorder. That's absolute insanity. And that has to be so heartbreaking for you as a practitioner, because you're burning yourself out, tapping yourself out, doing this, the hours. I mean, I've seen you doing it, and like, I've seen you doing it now after, but going through that and putting your emotions into it too, because you can only help somebody so much. You can only do so much in your network and your capabilities, but you know, to send somebody away and not be able to help them has to put a lot of stress and pressure and burnout on you as a clinician. Like,
it's a lot of self-care that has to happen. And yes. You know, you think you're doing a good job, and then one day you just kind of think to yourself, you know, I don't know that I'm doing the best job for me. So you do have to do those check-ins with yourself and allow yourself to feel, and allow yourself to feel in the moment you're feeling it. So there were times in with patients that I was feeling it with them.
Yes.
And that's not, the fact that I'm feeling it is not important, but the fact that I'm showing them the comfort level of that, so they know, oh, wait a minute, I have all this anxiety. And I would describe to them, it's probably as if you feel like there's a lion in the room all the time that's going to come at you. So your fight or flight. So now we're talking about a medical response. It's a physical response in the body. And they don't understand it. They're not understanding why they're feeling like this, that they want to run out the door and run and get away. Their fight or flight is in high effect. You know, they are really, their stress response is over, working overtime. So that feeling like there's a lion in the room all the time, and there is no lion, but they perceive it that way. They've now labeled it that way. And, you know, if you read journal articles, if you watch experts in this field, you know, we talk a lot about what social media has done to contribute to that, you know, and Courtney and I, we talked about this earlier about, you know, how you present yourself on social media. Maybe it's 80% of the truth. Maybe it's 50% of the truth. Maybe it's 20% of the truth. And it kind of gives this idea that we're not allowed to be sad or upset or mad about something. You know, we have to always paint the appearance that everything is fine. Commercial media does that.
Yes, absolutely. Or it's easy to put your feelings out there onto where everything is public and almost has to be public, even if you don't want it to be public. It's, you know, it's
the flip side of the coin.
Right. Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Well, why aren't there pictures of both of them anymore on social media? Okay. Or why did that status just change? Or what's going on? So yeah, absolutely. Where it's like, oh gosh, like, you know, or people compare themselves to that and say, mm-hmm. oh, look at that happy family of four on the beach. Well, why don't I have that? You know, like where
right, exactly
my family's falling apart or unraveling, or, you know, XYZ is going on. And it's like, you know, people compare themselves and think, well, gosh, and I think that creates a lot of depression or unworthiness or, you know, why don't I have this? And, you know, almost like a competition kind of thing. And
absolutely. I mean, you're eroding the self-worth.
Yes.
The self-esteem. We all see, you know, kids especially, we see this a lot with kids where, you know, if they're not good at something, then they're needing to, oh, you need to stop, do something you're good at. Well, when you're doing something that's a little uncomfortable and maybe it's a new skill set for you, you're actually making more neuro connections. So you're actually making more connections, more neuronal connections in the brain so that you can actually ride that wave in a healthier way.
That's cool.
So that, yeah. So, and if you have anxiety, but something anxiety producing happens, you are allowed to be anxious, you know, and a lot of people need permission for that.
I know exactly what you mean. Because I have a lot of my clients, which are CBD clients, me being one of those people. I've suffered from anxiety from my early 20s. And mm-hmm. it was something I was on medication for 16 years. And I share my story with anybody that I think I can help with it. And I started CBD 5 years ago and went off of my medication. There's also nothing wrong with supplementing CBD with a medication. You know, there's nothing wrong with being on medication. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that all the Absolutely. Time, you know, there's a time and a place for Western medicine, and there's a time and a place for lifestyle changes and nutrition changes. And you see it because you integrate both just perfectly. You have such a way of, you do your normal traditional way of practice, but now you're incorporating all this great functional medicine stuff. And it's like you see it with so many people. And I always encourage people, you know, there's other things to do. There's other ways to do. There's meditation,
yes.
and you know, practicing yoga and taking time for breath work and to, you know, make sure you're feeding your body right. Because like you said, most of your body serotonin lives in the gut. So if you're not feeding yourself right, your nutrition's off, things that can throw everything else out of balance, you know. But of course, when you're anxious, what do? You go to the comfort foods, you know, you do all of the things that maybe aren't so healthy, but you know, it's okay to have a balance between that.
Absolutely. And I'll talk to them about saying, okay, what are your behaviors now for coping? So say it's overeating, say it's video game watching, say it's, you know, sleeping, because that's a big one. Those three were teenage boys mostly. That was the top three. If I did a survey, those would be the top three. And I would say, well, let's just introduce a healthy coping mechanism and take one of those three away. So instead of being inactive, you're going to do something active every day of your choosing. And if it's something that speaks to them, they're most likely going to do it. If they don't enjoy it, they're most likely not going to do it. And they're not going to get happy hormone from it.
Right.
So it's not going to help them. So we're back to square one with no legitimate progress. So, you know, we talk about therapy as a bag of tricks, you know. So we have mindfulness, meditation, psychotherapy, exercise, nutrition, and medication. And the medication, for me, what I see mostly in kids and young adults, and sometimes adults themselves, depending on what maladaptive behaviors they've picked up along the way, the medication gives us a space to do the other things. So I find that if I start someone on an antidepressant, for instance, okay, statistics say if you come off within a year, you're going to go back on. That's pretty consistently true. So, you know, some people come, they get on their medication, 3 months later, they say they're wonderful, and then they want to come off. They generally don't come off well. You know, and they usually need to restart. Then there's those people that, you know, get on their medication. They feel like they have the space to do the other things. Now they don't feel like they want to sleep all day. They have some motivation. They can see other options. So I see it as that helps broaden your perspective. Okay. And perspective, my goodness, there's so many applications of that, you know, in terms of mood, in terms of exercise, or how difficult is something. it's as difficult as you make it to be. You know, it's as horrible as you make it to be. And when we talk about it in that sense, everyone has something to bring to the table. They have an idea of what they can do. I mean, I'm having kids come in, they're showing me their meditation apps, you know, I'm like, pick a song that you think describes your emotion if you can't tell me in your own words, you know, or journal it. So I'm having, you know, kids anywhere from the age of 6, 7, 8 years old to, you know, geriatric patients, but in children specifically, 6, 7, 8 years old, journaling, music, a picture, something, all the way up to, you know, freshmen, sophomore, junior, seniors in college.
That's
and
awesome.
It's wonderful that they feel like they can come in and share something. And the biggest thing is thanking them for allowing you to be the stranger in this traumatic thing that they're feeling. So they're feeling it to be traumatic, so it's real to them, but teaching people to reassign meaning to things that are not as bad as they are, you know? So we are labeling things both, you know, from a conceptual way, you know, our intellect, but we're also labeling things because we're having this physiologic response, this fight or flight, this, oh my God, I'm sweating, I have a headache, my heart's pounding, I can't breathe, and there's nothing going on. Mm-hmm. But we convinced ourselves there is.
Absolutely. I used to be guilty of that. I have control, like you just said. I have my ways of going, okay, it's time to take my deep breath, it's time to get mm-hmm. to that place. You know, I know how to control it now, where when I was in my early 20s, I didn't know. When I was in pharmacy school and I had no idea what these things were that I was having when I went to the doctor, I was like, why do I get this like 8 times a day where I'm having these palpitations and my hands and feet are numb and I feel like I can't breathe? Like, what's happening to me right now?
Yep.
But, you know, now it's like there's nothing happening, like, because it wouldn't even be stressful. I'd be taking notes in school, or I'd be like driving, like not stressed, like just doing something, taking.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I kind of wish I was back in school in my 20s, you know? Right? Knowing like, what I know now, I would be like, oh my God.
Right? But then I had no idea. So now I know, okay, mindfulness, take a deep breath. What is going on? Check in with myself. What, you know, okay, take, breathe through it, breath work, you know, think of why are you doing, what is making you feel this way? And usually it's absolutely nothing. And I know how to get through that without the stress of having a, you know, panic attack, if you want to call it that, where I absolutely don't have that anymore. And I know how to navigate it, which is, it's important. And it's important that you are doing what you're doing to them at this early age, where it's starting earlier and earlier with, you know, with, especially with COVID stuff, this whole new normal that we have, where you're that person who's there as the trusted, you know, stranger, like you said, that they trust with, that they're showing how to get through their emotions, and you're working through it with them at such an early age so that they don't carry it on with them in the rest of their lives, that they accept what's going on, understand what's going on, and learn how to cope with it, you know, in their own way, which could be journaling, artistic work, music, whatever it is, which is so important to do at any age. But you teaching them that at this early age is so awesome. It's just so great. Like, kudos to you.
And, you know, looking at it from a different perspective. So anxiety is really an eye for detail, not just a cerebral eye for detail, but your body is like high tuned, you know? Mm-hmm. So I tell patients, you think it's your kryptonite. It is your superpower, and you haven't figured it out yet. So we need to figure out, how do we unlock this for you so that you use this to your best benefit? And you are hypersensitive to others. So oftentimes someone that has anxiety or depression, they can sense when someone else has that same feature that's around them. And even just a look, or, you know, a hand on the shoulder, or a nod, or a wink, or whatever, like, they feel that they're not by themselves. So it's really interesting.
I feel like you're speaking to me right now, because I think that's why, like, that's why I'm good at what I do. Like, that's why mm-hmm. it makes me the pharmacist that I am, because I'm not all about just giving out the pills all day. I can definitely see when somebody walks in, and I'll walk down and say, hey, how you doing today? Hey, is everything okay? You are more hyper in tune to what's going on, and you can absolutely sense it on somebody's face when they're not okay. And, you know, picking and choosing to not embarrass somebody, but be like, hey, how's it going? Like you said, almost like
exactly.
a wink or a smile or something to let them know, like, you're not alone. I got you. I'm here for you. I got you. You know,
why can't kindness be the conduit?
Exactly.
You know,
it needs to be. It needs
absolutely
to be more of it. And it seems like it's for some reason, it's the opposite of that right now. And I don't understand it. People coming into the pharmacy and it's people want to argue about silly things. And it's like, we need to have some kind of revolution right now and change things because it's right, just, it needs to like revert and like go back and we need to like band together because like there's just so many negative things and we have to create the positives, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, this idea of, you know, where are we as a nation? I mean, if you look at chronic disease, you know, prevalency of hypertension, hyperlipidemia, diabetes, obesity is highest it's ever been. You know, we should not be that nation. That should not be our reality. You know, when you're seeing type 2 diabetes in pediatrics, somebody has to reset, you know, reset the world.
Absolutely. It's too much and it's happening way too often. And I can say it just, hearsay, but you're seeing it firsthand. Like,
absolutely.
Your patients come in working in a pediatric office several times a week and seeing pediatric patients, you know.
And in my adult setting, it's interesting because I would say ages 36 through 65. 36 through 65, majority of the patients have hypertension, hyperlipidemia, type 2 diabetes, or prediabetes, at least overweight, if not obese, okay? Alterations in liver function, as noted on LFTs, not just this idea that, you know, maybe I'm storing cholesterol more, you know? there's markers, which are actually late markers. So, you know, we're seeing this across the board and it's a very frightening perspective because when you look at this, you also think about nutrients and how they get absorbed, but also mood obviously is a direct product of how your body's using your fuel, you know, and I feel like we're all sports cars and we're putting diesel in.
Yeah, you know? No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. It just seems like, and too many people are in just fight or flight mode right now, just getting by, just doing what they can to get by. And it's
right. And, you know, say you come in for, you know, a regular visit and, you know, we're talking about mood and medications. And if you're not healthy in other ways, that medication may or may not work for you. You know,
no,
the medication's got to hit a receptor, but if the receptor's not available, we got a problem.
It's yeah. true. And that's why I do what I do. And that's why I've chosen to, you know, to divide up my time between the pharmacy and my functional medicine practice, because there's only so much you can do in the pharmacy setting where people, you know, want to accept
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
It's, you can give somebody all the pills in the world, but you know, when they still keep coming in and they're still telling you they don't feel good, or they're still coming in and adding on another prescription for a side effect from another prescription. And it just seems like a snowball effect. There's people that want the help and there's people that are just like, okay, I'm here for my next prescription. Just add it on to the pile. Mm-hmm. And it just is like, you know, it just seems like you said, like as a nation, like we have to be able to do better than just, you know, just throwing a prescription, slapping a prescription Band-Aid on it and that being the end of it. Where it's like, okay, well, why is this happening? Let's figure out what is happening that's causing it. It could absolutely, like you said, be a situation. COVID was a situation. It was mm-hmm. something where
absolutely.
On many different levels for people of all different ages and stages and whatever their situation was, had their own struggles going on. But to throw on having something going on before COVID and having, you know, something where they were treating with a prescription and weren't feeling good, you know, and then adding more prescriptions to the mix. It's like, there's gotta be something better than just this snowball effect of just adding the prescriptions on. Like, why is this happening? Let's get to the root cause. We can blame COVID and say, yes, but even before that, what was going on to say, you know, what is it? How's your gut health? What's going on there? Are you absorbing all of your micronutrients?
You know, yeah. Well, it also poses the question, you know, would COVID have hit us this hard if we were not this unhealthy?
Absolutely. You know,
and I think about that all the time.
I do all the time too. And there's so many people, and I'm sure you see it more than I do in the pharmacy. I just usually have the people that come in and are complaining of, hey, how to treat a symptom with something over the counter or a supplement. Mm-hmm. But are you just seeing so many disorders now? Like disorders, like or chronic conditions now that people are coming in and they're saying, okay, I had COVID 6 months ago and I've had a migraine ever since, or I just can't get any energy back. And you can see the bags under their eyes. You can see that they're not sleeping and they're not, you know, they're not functioning. And it's what's going on in their immune system, you know, after COVID. What has it done to them personally if they've had other underlying conditions going on, and, you know, it just maybe magnified whatever they had going on, if they had anything autoimmune or
oh, absolutely. And if you think about it, you know, viruses are commonly the cause of autoimmune flares. Absolutely. So, you know, we did see a fair amount of those in kids. And, you know, and also during COVID, you know, I know this is a shocker, but we saw other things than COVID.
I know. Do you believe that the flu's back? We haven't dispensed Tamiflu in 2 years, and now it's like people are coming in with the flu. I'm like, oh,
absolutely.
It was gone for 2 years, like magic. I was like, what?
Interesting. You know, so it's like, okay, if you're flu negative and you're COVID negative, there's nothing wrong with you. Well, Right. Guess what? Right. There's right. ear infections. There's all these other pediatric viral illnesses that occur every year, right? You know, and the same percentage rates, and which we still saw, which also can affect your mood and also can affect how anxious you are, because everyone keeps COVID testing you. And guess what? That's not what you have. You know, so now we're sticking a probe up a five-year-old's nose, or younger, you know. And do you think they want to come back and see us for their well exam and get their immunizations that, you know, are on our list of recommended or required for them to attend school again? I mean, it really is interesting. You know, we try to be a calm island in the storm. You know, most kids like to come to our office. They like to hang out and play when we are allowed to do that. During COVID, we closed our waiting room. You know, we did things to protect each other. Now that's open on a, you know, a partial or head counted basis as to how many people are in there. But, you know, that's important to see them playing with the toys. What things are they gravitating to? You know, are they at the train table? Is this child, you know, this child that normally comes running in and picks up all the toys, comes walking in and sits on mom's lap, not happy to be there? What's going on? So seeing depression and anxiety in young kids is just such a horrible thing to see. And they're taking on, these are adult problems. They're worried that their grandmothers are going to die of COVID.
It's sad, right?
And sometimes the grandmother is their kinship care.
And it is, it's interesting and it's horrible, because it's, you know, it's like you said, it's not even that somebody's telling them this, it's they're learned by.
It's everywhere.
You know, it is. Yeah. And it just becomes, you hear things, you see things, you feel things, and it's not just, oh, okay, this is what you were told, so this is going to be. Kids are very smart. They're very intuitive. They're very perceptive. And when they see, like, or hear, like you said, if they hear something that they're not supposed to be listening to on a grown-up level that they might not even understand, they still can take it in internally and express things in their own way, and have their own anxieties.
And so much information. You know, if you listen to all the sources of information, you can be completely confused at any given time as to what your role was, you know, in this whole, you know, journey. And having a background in intensive care medicine, in, you know, multiple intensive care units, including the respiratory and medical ICU, taking care of patients that had respiratory illnesses, that we could have acquired those illnesses. You know, this is pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could be TB, it could be, you know, encephalitis, it could be a number of things. And, you know, we did all those things. When you do those things in small number, you're allowed to recover and recoil back, you know, back to your usual self. Right. But when there's no recovery time for, you know, families, the patient themselves, the caregivers, I mean, that's really difficult. It creates a very different story.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, this is a topic. I talk about this almost every single day in both my practices. I started to count how many people actually cried during the visit for each day and wrote it in my planner, because it was captivatingly more common. There was just recently last week, out of 20 patients, I had 14 patients cry sometime during the visit.
And that takes a toll on you. I mean, I mean, like, we're like putting all else aside of like, of just mental health of patients, like, for you as the caregiver, like for you as the practitioner looking at it and and sitting to help with somebody. I mean, it's especially like when you can't fix something and it's you don't have an answer for something, or they're crying and you don't even know how to console them. And you're good at that. I mean, I know you on a personal level. You're good at that. Your personality is just so warm and inviting, and you're a good listener and all of those things. But when it comes down to the heart of the matter, this is something that's happening in our world that we have no control over. And, you know, and you're seeing that every day, it burns you out. It gets you to the point of that. That's one of the main reasons why I chose to do what I did at the pharmacy. I was giving vaccinations. I was some days giving 200 a day, and it was day in, it was day out. Every single person, you know, you'd hear a blurb of their story only if they were sitting with me for just a minute. It was, you know, it was definitely tears. It was worry. It was anxiety. It was complaining about something one side versus the other side. It was just was so exhausting and mentally draining. And I did that for months. And I can totally imagine how you must feel when you're in a, you know, 10-minute appointment with somebody and you're hearing a deeper level of things, because I scratch the surface with it with people, and you're actually diving down deep and learning more about actually what's going on. And I can't even, I mean, I just, you're just one special lady, because that has to be very, very challenging. And I think that people don't realize the burnout of, you know, practitioners during all of this as well.
You really have to listen to yourself and listen to your peers. And we all get to the point where we kind of missed our limit, you know, where we're like, ooh, I really should have concentrated a little bit more on the self-care piece, you know, and make it really an integral part of your day.
Yeah.
And do it on your own terms, though, you know, and I think that that's important to know yourself and to make sure that, you know, your family, your friends, your support system, your peer network understands your needs and you understand their needs, because you want to be able to provide that structure for each other so that you can do that. You can help each other. You can give that person the break and say, oh, you know what? You look like you need to go walk outside for 10 minutes, you know, do a little nature bathing, breathe some fresh air, just get a new perspective, reset yourself, you know, and being able to do that is incredibly important. And we don't see the value sometimes, you know, we don't see the value in that. And in terms of like patient care appointment times, oh my goodness. I mean, that, you know, running late every day is almost common now. So I often will, you know, it's managing perspective. I tell my secretary, you tell the next couple of patients, we are running 15 minutes behind or running 20 minutes behind or whatever it is, so that I'm showing respect for them and their time, but they also know I'm going to spend the extra time with them too.
No, and that's important. I think that's important for them to know that they have that secure feeling that when they go in, that they can open up to you and that it's not rushed. So they know that 15 minutes is let them know you're running behind and let them know why you're running behind. And you're going to get that same time that everybody else got, because it's important for you to be able to express yourself, and you're going to listen just as much and you're going to do whatever you can. And, you know, and even especially in the PEDS population, in all populations, though, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
people just want to be heard. People,
when you're at the end of your rope, you're at the end of your rope, no matter what age you are, you know, so you need someone to throw out the life vest. And it's just becoming more common. And so there's got to be a way that we, you know, we can spread kindness to each other, recognize when things are maybe not going well for someone. Take the couple minutes just to acknowledge it, you know, give people a compliment. It sets the stage for the next couple moments with them, or depending on how long you're with them, you know, maybe it's an hour, then that sets the stage for how that's going to go. And you're going to feel so much better.
Yes, it is important. It's important in all aspects, just holding a door for somebody and smiling and saying good morning, or, you know, just like you said, wow, that's a pretty outfit, or just giving somebody a compliment, or just sending some kind of smile. I drive a Jeep, and we have the Jeep wave, you know, when you do the Jeep wave when you're driving. And I'm like, I think we could have world peace if everybody just drove a Jeep. I mean, you get waves, you get tipping the cups, you get guys tipping their hats down.
That's what my daughter does. She drives a Buick, and she says the Buick is a hat tip. That's what it should be. And she does. It's hilarious.
I absolutely love it. I mean, and it is with the Jeep. It's funny because sometimes I'll like not have my hand up to give a wave, and I'll be drinking my coffee and I'll like put my cup up in the air. Like, yes, it's so funny, but it's just, you know, just giving somebody just love during the day. And if it's something as just silly as just say good morning to somebody. Just say it, hey, smiling at somebody even. I mean,
you know, we forgot how to do that because we had a mask on for 2 years. You know? So I think that is part of it too. It's a body dysmorphic thing. You know, we don't realize we're not doing it because we haven't been doing it for more than 2 years, I guess.
It is. And we were just talking about it the other day too. I was talking about it with my family. We were just talking about how kids, you know, of that age where, you know, when they're in preschool and nursery school, even in kindergarten, first grade, they're learning and you learn by emotions and what people
Absolutely.
Are saying, you know, and they didn't have that, you know, and my son was telling me the one teacher, I think it was the kindergarten teacher, she had one of those masks that had like the plastic, like it was a mask, but it had like a clear part.
A window, yeah.
Smile, yeah, like a window in her mask. But I mean, I think that's important because you can read, and learning how to read people's emotions and facial expressions is all part of development. And, you know, and kids missing out on that, not only being at home for X amount, but then when they did start back in school, you know, the masks, which they just released, and I don't even know where, I know it's different in different states. I know in our state, they just finally released it where we are mask free now, I think for like 2 weeks, but it's been a long 2 years, you know, it's been crazy.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I could talk about this forever. You know that.
We could, but I'm so grateful that you came on today to talk about this because it is so important. Just the awareness of it is so important for people to know that they're not alone is so important. Mm-hmm. You know, along every stage of the way, whether it's a kid, whether it's an adult, whether it's just some minor anxiety issues to somebody who's having severe, you know, severe anxiety or even mental, what was the word that you used? I like the way you put it. What term did you say?
Neurogenic disease.
Yeah. Like I love that. I love putting it that way because it's not putting really like a label on somebody where you're like, okay, there's levels and layers with all of mental health and, you know, for people.
Absolutely. And it's a medical condition.
Yeah.
But that gets forgotten.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. So I think it was really important for us to talk about it today and for people to know they're not alone, for people to reach out. There's always somebody there to talk to and, you know, gosh, find either one of us on this podcast if you're listening and you need somebody to talk to, because both of us will. And I'm sure, you know, you're never alone. Never, never, never. And I think that's important for so many people of any age to know.
I agree. And, you know, this idea that we're siloed and you know, that's perpetuated with obviously with pandemic and social media sometimes, that's not real. It's a false construct. So we're here for each other. All you have to do is reach out.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep.
120%. All right, my darling. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. And
you're so welcome,
we'll have
Courtney.
To do it. We'll have to do it again soon because this is
I agree. I agree.
Thank you again so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really had a great time. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Find us on social media, on Facebook at The Wellness Pharma Chick and online at our website, balancedwellnesssolutions.net. Check back weekly for new episodes. Until next time, take care of yourself and be well.